Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is making the impossible possible. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579. Toll-free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to kind of start by setting the table for today and setting the table for the new year. I don't know if you noticed the whole year change thing, but it's 2017. And it seemed a good time to talk about making the impossible possible. And part of why, and I'll just say this up front, part of why I chose this topic is because we're about to start a program. It's our most popular program. We do it at least once a year every year. It's called Creating the Impossible. And we're about to start on Sunday, the Sunday after the show airs, the 7th of January. And you can learn more about the program at michaelneal.org/impossible. And essentially, the program exists because I noticed something in my coaching very early on, which is that all my clients lied to me about what they wanted. Now, they didn't lie to me in a mean way. They didn't lie to me in the sense of, ha-ha, I'm going to trick Michael. They lied in the sense that when they would say what they wanted to create in their lives, what they wanted to bring into their lives, they would say things that weren't what they really wanted. They were what they thought they could have. Or they weren't what they really wanted. They were what they thought they needed. Or they weren't what they really wanted. They were what they thought had to happen in order for them to get what they wanted. And you can think about that for yourself. Is if you were to make a list right now, and maybe you've already made a list because it's the new year, so you might have your goal list, your resolution list, and you may already have sort of a sense of, well, okay, here are the things that I want. And if you go down that list and you look at it and you rate each thing on a scale from 1 to 10, and where one is actually, I would rather get bubonic plague, and 10 is, yeah, this is exactly what I want. Just see where they are. And chances are there are surprisingly few 10s on the list. Now, I want to also caution you, because sometimes people go, it's not a 10, it's a 12. Well, that's not real. Like a 12 usually speaks to a kind of a desperation, a kind of a lust, a kind of a, oh my God, this would make everything okay. And so what you really want is a sense of relief, not whatever it is that you've got at your 12. Now, you may be an exception to this, and I'm happy to talk to you if you think you are. I'm happy to talk to you anyways, and we can explore your goals and projects. Again, the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, outside the U.S., 760-918-4300. But are there things on your list that you just actually would love to see come into being? For no great reason other than you think it'd be cool. And there's lots of ways at getting at this, right? There's lots of different ways of sort of getting closer to your innate desire, to your innate sense of direction. And I'll share a few as we go. But I want to talk about the impossible part. Because one of the reasons that we And there's a kind of an innocence to it, and there's a kind of a well-meaning aspect to it. But one of the reasons that we don't just say what we want is because we think we can't have it. And we think, therefore, we're avoiding disappointment by aiming lower or aiming to the left or the right of what we really want. And there's two reasons why that's a terrible strategy. And the first reason why that's a terrible strategy is because there's an energy that comes with authentic desire. There's a capacity that is unleashed in us when we're aiming in a direction that we really want to go. There's a level of enthusiasm and creativity that just is readily available to us when we are looking at what we really want, then when we're trying to create what we don't really want but think we can have, don't really want but think we should want, it's not there. And so we wonder why we think, gosh, if I'm struggling so hard to make ends meet, I can't even contemplate making so much money that I can do everything that I want to do and take care of others. Right? If I'm working this hard to have an average relationship where we're not unduly verbally abusive to one another, I don't know that I'm up for the effort that it would take to have a great relationship that was incredibly loving and supportive. Right? If it's this hard for me to, you know, work in a job with limited responsibility, I don't know that I'm up for really starting my own business or developing my own project. And again, the problem with that logic is that you're trying to do it yourself. When you're taking on something you don't really want to be doing, all you've kind of got is logic, reason, and will. Like, okay, I can make myself go to work so I don't get fired. Okay, I can make myself be nice so they don't yell at me. Well, you know, okay, I can do the absolute minimum I've got to do so that I don't lose my home. But that's not inspiration. I would think it's rather obvious that that's not inspiration. That's not that extra energy, that hidden force, that deeper creative power that makes creating what we want so much simpler, so much easier and surprising than trying to do things through logic and reason and will. So what we're trying to do, in a sense, is save us from disappointment, save ourselves from disappointment, save ourselves from, you know, having to work even harder than we're working. Save ourselves from ourselves in our mind. But here's the thing. Disappointment has nothing to do with getting what you want or not getting what you want. Disappointment is a thought. Now, every feeling is a thought. Right? If you listen to the show at all, you know that's kind of right at the heart of the notion of living from the inside out, is that we live in the feeling of our in-the-moment thinking. Whatever you are feeling now is whatever you are thinking now. Experienced in consciousness, brought to life by the deeper intelligence, by the universal mind behind the brain. Right? It's just how the system works. It's how we're made. And it's an incredible system, right? It works beautifully. You cannot think happy and feel sad any more than you can think sad and feel happy, or think scared and feel relaxed. It doesn't work that way. It's very simple. And when you start to see that that's all that is ever going on in the inner world, we're feeling our thinking moment by moment by moment, then navigating life becomes simpler because we stop trying to navigate by our feelings. Well, I want to do things that are going to bring me these feelings. So here are all the things on my list that I think will make me happy and fulfilled. And I want to avoid these feelings so I won't have things on my list that are going to bring disappointment and sadness and frustration. But if you've ever actually accomplished something, even something that you really wanted to accomplish, you know that there were times where you were frustrated. There were times where you were disappointed. There were times where you probably even got angry or felt a bit hopeless. And that's because you think. same as me, same as every human being. We're thinking creatures. We're feeling creatures. But if you know that you're feeling your thinking, you're feeling thought in the moment, then it doesn't make sense to try and navigate your circumstances by that. There's a deeper part of us. I sometimes call it the creative potential, or your creative genius, or your innate health, or your innate well-being, or the wisdom within, that can help you navigate life beautifully, like an inner GPS, even as you're thinking and feeling your way through your days. And the fact that it sometimes looks, it really looks like, no, I'm feeling this situation. I'm feeling disappointment because this happened. I'm feeling joy because they said that. It simply doesn't work that way. And I'm not asking you to believe me, but if you look, if you start to pay attention, if you look with the intention not of seeing whether I'm right or wrong, but seeing what's true about your own experience, you'll start to see, there are times where I'm not thinking about something, and it's having no impact on my experience at all. And there are other times where I'm thinking obsessively about it, and it feels like my entire experience is being created by it. And that's just the thought-feeling system in action. So we're going to talk more about possibility and impossibility. We're going to talk more about clarifying what you want and what's kind of worth creating. And I'm going to talk to you. So numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S., 760-918-4300. And let's start in Kansas City, Missouri, with Mary. Mary, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael.
Hey. What's on your mind?
Well, I was a nurse for all my life in ICU, and I retired. It was in the, well, close to 03. Now that I don't have that purpose of trying to save people's lives on a daily basis, I'm really struggling for a purpose in the second half of my life. And I don't really have a clue.
So tell me what you mean. This may sound like a really obvious question, but tell me what you mean by a purpose.
Well, in ICU, your purpose was to keep the person alive and be sharp and just get them back on their feet. And in retirement, I have friends. I belong to a community center. I do things, but I don't have something I'm passionate about. Well, there's one thing. I want to go back to Ireland, which is where our family home is. But other than that, I can't identify a purpose, something that I can feel passionate about in my older years.
Okay. Now, have you ever met somebody, and you may or may not have, but who's kind of indiscriminately passionate? I want to say anyone Italian, but that's
sure.
A gross overgeneralization.
I'm not sure if I have or not.
Okay. So there are people, and I'm going to guess you know some, but there are people who will have passionate arguments about whether the color of a rose is this shade of red or that. They will wax philosophic about the truffle, the white truffle on a plate of pasta. They will throw themselves into a game of old maid with a six-year-old in their 40s.
Yes, I know some people that have done that. I did that over Christmas with my five-year-old granddaughter.
Right, there you go. Now, what that points to is that passion is not connected to circumstance. Like everything else that we can feel, it's quality that is in us. It's a place we can come from rather than a something we have to find outside of ourselves.
Okay, I get you.
And the problem is, if you don't get that, then you'll keep looking around for something to make you passionate. And like you said, what you might find, well, yeah, if I went to Ireland, but
yeah, everything else looks like it's not there.
It's not there. Whereas if you were, you know, the expression being loved up.
Yeah, I've heard it.
Yeah, so like, you know, when you get a couple and they're all loved up, right? And they're just in love with everything. You know, and sometimes new parents, you know, if they're not too exhausted,
oh,
they're loved.
Oh, definitely new parents.
Right? And it's just like, oh, he vomited on my shirt. Look, honey, he vomited. Right? That's passion. Like, that's the inside-out nature of passion. Now, what's really cool about that is when you see that you can do anything with passion, and you don't have to do anything with passion, you start to see that passion is an independent variable. So
okay.
I can be with my friends passionately or not. I can work out passionately or not. I can be with the grandkids passionately or not. And then there's this separate knowing, this separate guidance system, this separate desire, which will point me towards what I'd really love to do. Not because I could be passionate about it, not because I found a purpose, but simply because I really want to. I'd really love that. Now, can I ask, it sounds like going to Ireland would fit that bill.
Well, it would, because I happened to find two old friends from 40 years ago when I worked over there, and I got in contact with them, so it's fueling my desire to go. But it's not really feasible at this point.
Oh,
I
please tell me
it will be.
It seems
almost impossible. Pardon?
Please tell me it seems almost impossible.
Well, it seems almost impossible.
Yay! Because, A, that makes this very relevant for today's show, which is about making the impossible possible. And B, that gives me an excuse to give you a free place on our Creating the Impossible program.
Okay.
So if you hang on the line after we're done, I'm gonna ask Rachel in studio to get your details, and we're going to send you all the information so you can start the program with us on Sunday.
Oh, okay. That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. And rather than stick with you on the call, I'll talk a little bit more about what we talked about. So stay on, but you'll have a lot of fun when you join in.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
A pleasure, Mary. So I really want to kind of just highlight what, you know, that was so perfect, and no, that wasn't the plant, although I did kind of nudge her along just using the language I wanted her to use. But, well, I mean, I'd love to do this, but. Well, I mean, it'd be great if this happened, but. Well, I mean, of course, if I could do that, but. Right? That's the impossible. Even if you kind of know, okay, no, it's not beyond the laws of physics impossible. It really feels impossible. And things feel impossible when we cannot see the path from here to there. We simply cannot see how we will get from where we are to where we're headed. And so we think it's impossible. But fortunately, creation is a non-linear process. In other words, unless you're doing paint by numbers, which is not the really most creative art there is, though I get it's kind of fun to fill in the colors, you start with a blank canvas, a paintbrush, and a set of paints. And you begin to create. And if you're very new to creating with paints, then your first paintings aren't going to look much like what you want them to look like. But sometimes, if you're open to it, they might look really cool, even if they're not what you originally set out to do. And those things that, you know, let's take something different. My wife and her friends went out recently to do a pottery class, right? Well, you know, their bowls don't look exactly like what they set out to create. And when they started, they had no idea how they were going to go from lump of clay to really cool piece of pottery. But by engaging in the process, moment by moment, by taking instruction where they needed instruction, by learning from what they did that didn't work, they very quickly were able to throw pots. Which, unlike what it sounds like, doesn't mean throwing a pot against a wall and breaking it. It's actually, you know, creating it. You know, very quickly, you start to create paintings that look like real things. I'm looking right now at five paintings of my family that were done by a friend of mine. And from where I'm sitting, I'm about 10, 15 feet away, they look almost like photographs. But when you go up to them, you can see, oh no, look, these are just a bunch of brush strokes on a canvas. And we create the magic in them through our own perception, through our own mind. And that's how the world works. We have a magical paintbrush called thought, and we have an infinite canvas called consciousness. And we have this animating intelligence and spirit I call the mind, the divine mind, the universal mind, the big mind, the deeper mind. And from that mind, we can create in the world. The world can become our canvas. And just like with any art, you don't know how you're going to get from blank canvas to painting of my daughter. You might have some rough idea of where you're headed. You might have some rough idea of where you're going to start. You might know it's going to involve painting. But other than that, you don't know till you get there. If you're a writer, one of my favorite descriptions of writing comes from E.L. Doctorow, who wrote the book Ragtime, is probably his most famous book. And he described the process of writing a novel as being like driving cross-country at night in the fog with your headlights on. Most of the time, you can only see 5 feet ahead, 10 feet ahead. But you kind of know if you aim yourself in a direction, you're going to get there. And that's how we create the impossible. That's how we take on those things, we create those things that we'd really love to bring into being. But we just can't see how we're going to get from here to there. Is we don't let the fact that we can't see the path stop us from setting out. Because in fact, we only ever need to take the next step. No more, no less. And the next will become obvious to us. The next will be revealed. Let's go to New York City and talk to another Michael. Hey, Michael, welcome to the show. Happy New Year.
Hey, Michael. Thank you for taking the call. Happy New Year as well.
You're welcome. What's on your mind today?
So I called in last year, and you gave me some great advice on self-sabotage and going above the source, you know, back to the source instead of from the place of the problem to going back to the source. And that was very helpful. I got a lot of other great advice last year, and I was able to kind of work myself up into creation and passion, coming up with some new great projects, putting a few great meetings together around it, and really stepping forward, as well as getting some of my regular job done and life and personal, you know, getting the to-dos done, which was nice. You know, I definitely had some ups and downs and some struggles to try to do it all, but it was nice. I did get into that passionate mode and really came up with some things that, you know, I think are potentials for great projects and, you know, income streams and helping different people in the world. So that's all good. And so now I'm into the first, you know, week of 2017. And I guess my question kind of comes back to some of the same place, which is, you know, now that I've done some of that and got into that passionate place and created the ideas and have them written down, you know, how do I work on them? I wind up just kind of defaulting and working on what's right in front of me, the to-dos I need to get done, you know, to manage, you know, regular business, regular job, if you will, some of the stuff to clean up at home. But I wind up pulling back, and unless I'm in that real passionate place, I wind up pulling back from going ahead and getting the woodwork done, if you will, on those projects, on the bigger
projects. Okay, so give me an example. Give me one of the projects that, you know, if you in your mind weren't self-sabotaging or procrastinating or whatever you think you're doing, that you'd love to work on.
Sure. So one of the projects is an app in the alternative medicine space. I wound up meeting someone on Thanksgiving night that was developing this app and got an investment opportunity. I came up with a bunch of ideas around it. I wrote a letter to him, but didn't send it yet. I'm kind of like, I need to do some more work before I send it out. And I kind of pulled short there. And one of the reasons I pulled short, just to clue you in maybe a little further, is that I came up with two other ideas that sounded great to me, that a couple of my friends were in that space, and I wound up setting up a meeting with a financier and kind of got into this other amazing, great idea. So I've got two of them now that I think are great ideas, but that I don't necessarily hit, if you will, on my regular wake up and get these things done list. It's more in the background.
Okay, so I'm gonna reduce this down to an almost childish level.
Okay.
What are you afraid would happen if you just mailed the letter or clicked send on the email?
I guess the direct answer to that question, I have thought about that, not specific to that email, but just as to getting those bigger things done, is it's kind of like a fear of success. It's like, oh, wow, if I really put all that together, I'd be in like a different stratosphere than I am now. And would I be able to handle it all? And would some of my self-sabotage come back in? And
all right, let me give you a little formula, Michael. Let me give you a little formula. Okay? Creativity is the opposite of self-absorption. Another way that I could say it is creativity is the opposite of psychology. So at any moment, you're in your creativity or you're in your psychology. You're in your creative mind, coming from that deeper creative potential, or you're in your personal thinking, which is habitual, conditioned, programmed, and probably about as messed up as all of ours.
Right. Yeah.
And so there's a simpler delineator than how do I navigate my psychology? You don't. You let the fact that you're in your psychology let you know, oh, I'm not in my creativity. Of course this is hard. Let me get back to my creativity. Let me get sometimes just back into action. In other words, the notion, I use this analogy sometimes, and you may have heard me use it, but the notion that to not do something because of a fear of success is like not getting in a car because you're scared of heights. And somebody would go, well, what does getting in a car have to do with a fear of heights? And you're like, well, I might drive to a really high place and then I'd be scared. Like, there are so many things that happen between here and there that you have no idea what you'll be thinking and feeling if you get somewhere with this project.
Right.
And yet we take what we make up so seriously, we don't even start.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, I've gotten to the place where I've started. I have started. And then I wind up in that pullback, hold up place. I hear you. So you're saying get back to the state, get back to that creative state. where it all is kind of magical, and then go and do the project from there. That if I'm in a psychological
in and out of that. That as you start to really get a feel for the difference between being in your head and being in your creativity, it will be really easy to kind of go, wow, I am so in my head. Okay, I'm either going to just keep taking action because that's what occurs to me to do, or I'm just going to take a break because that's what occurs to me to do. But I know that I'm not going to be that brilliant for the next however long I'm here.
Right, and kind of.
But I also know I'm not going to stay here.
Right.
Because
kind of
what happens, we're
thing.
Actually, the reason we spend so much time in our personal thinking, in our psychology, is because we think that's normal. Like, that's familiar. Oh, yeah, here I am again. Here I go again. That's and that self, oh, fear of success. Oh, fear of this. Oh, yeah. Well, that just means it's habitual. It's not the default. The default is actually the flow. The default is where you're just present and fresh ideas are coming and you're engaged with whatever you're doing.
Right, right. No, I do get that default is how you're born and is how we're all until we're conditioned.
So here's the question for you, Michael. Will you send the email? Yeah?
You say, will you? Yes.
Yeah. Now, I'll make you a promise. Okay. If you get super duper successful because you sent that email and it's upsetting to you, call me back and I'll talk you through it.
Right.
I hope you're hearing my tongue in my cheek.
No, I hear you. That does make sense. I do hear you. And it's not. It's just that the fear of success is not as palpable until you're asked the question. Like, I'm not actually not sending it because of fear. It's just more of that. Well, I guess it is. No, I guess if you really
we're being as accurate as we can be, you haven't sent it because you haven't sent it, and now you'll send it because you're going to send it.
Right.
And if we think about it too much more than that, we're going to be back into our psychology.
Understood. Separate the creation from the psychology. Understand that it's natural and just go for it when you're in the creative place and accept the other place as well. I think that's what you're saying. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll make the same offer to you, Michael, if you're up for it. Come join us in creating the impossible, and we'll help you. We'll help support you in jumping forward on these things.
That's the course that you were just talking about.
Absolutely. I'll put you on hold, and Rachel or Michael grab you and get your details, and we'll get you signed up.
Awesome. I look forward to that. That would be amazing. All right, cool.
All right, Michael. Well,
thank
you. Look forward
to
talking to you more.
Help. I appreciate that. Thanks for the help again. Thank you.
So, you know, this is great. You know, I'm really appreciating these calls because you're sharing exactly why we don't do what we know to do. We don't do what we're inspired to do. We don't do what we're excited about doing is we get caught up. We get caught up in our personal thinking. We get caught up in our psychology, and we think we need to work through that before we can create. It's a can of worms. It's a rabbit hole. I don't know if you know the metaphor of rabbit holes, as I understand it, is because it's just a little hole, right? And you think, oh, I'll just poke my head down here, you know, won't take long. I'll have a little look around. But underground, it's this vast interconnected network of tunnels and warrens, and you can go down a rabbit hole and get lost for months. Well, your psychology is a rabbit hole, same as mine. And each time you go poking around in there, particularly when you go poking around with, you know, the internet as a guide, right? Or poking around with what my six best friends have told me that I sort of remember from childhood about going through rabbit holes, like you try to navigate your psychology like that, you're just liable to get lost in it. You're liable to get lost in yourself. You're liable to get self-obsessed, self-absorbed. And when you are absorbed in you, there's no space for creation. And the second you drop out of that, not only does your psychology kind of start to flow better and take care of itself more, but you're able to create independent of your psychology. That's why being a messed up human being in terms of psychology does not limit creativity. That's why so many highly creative people were also highly dysfunctional. It's why that can be true. I'm not saying they were dysfunctional because they were creative. I'm saying the fact that so many highly creative people are highly dysfunctional just shows you that you don't have to have your head right in order to create. You just have to be able to get out of it long enough to create. And in fact, one of the reasons that creative people love creating, particularly if they find their psychology difficult, is for many of them, it's the only time when they're not self-absorbed. It's the only time where it's not all about them. And it's amazing what you can start to create when it's not about you. It's amazing what seemed impossible, how much progress you can make when it's not about how you look, how you're doing, how you feel, how you come across. It's literally about what you're creating, what's coming into being in the world. I sometimes think a beautiful metaphor for it, and this will work for some of you and not so much for others, but a beautiful metaphor for it is having a kid. Right? When you create a kid, A, it's kind of fun, usually. You know. B, it takes longer than you think. C, there are huge long parts of the process that are kind of nothing to do with you, where it's incubating. And you can sort of create an optimal environment for it, but the heavy lifting isn't being done by you. And I forget what number I'm on, but whatever the next number is, there's a certain point at which it takes on a life of its own. And it's no longer about you creating it. It's about getting to witness and be part of the creation as it comes to life. And that's the beauty of creating versus goal setting or manifesting or the other ways we have of talking about how things come into being in the world. Let's nip over to Melbourne, Australia, as you do, and speak with Helen. Hey, Helen. Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year to you, Michael. I'm sure it's going to be a fabulous one for you. I hope it is for me as well.
Well, there you go.
Michael, I love your work. And I spoke to you a couple of months ago, actually, but this is, and I keep listening and looking in the direction. I think that you really, in the last couple of callers, answered the question that I had, and as always, listening to you seems to, reveal another layer, if you like. But really, I guess I want to talk about the Creating the Impossible program as much as anything. I originally said, how do you change that postage stamp of possibility? Like I certainly, live my life on a very small stamp, and part of my goal this year is to, and one of my words is to be unleashed, because I constrict myself into how I think. I think when I talked to you last, I used the word gird my loins. I feel, very bit battered by it all. So part of my thing is to do that. But I think that when I was thinking about the Creating the Impossible program, I was really at a loss to know what it was that I wanted to create. How I wanted to experiment with that, and that's partly the postage stamp, partly my goal was to really just understand the experience of creating something, how that really works in the three principles way. One more thing. I think my big audacious goal that I've actually set myself broke and all that stuff over was to really change the pet food paradigm. And I've I've gone about that in a particular way by creating products that actually help that, help to change it, help to make homemade food bottles. But I can't, that's too big a goal. You know, that's too massive, and that's the one I've been beaten up. So I thought, well, maybe, you know, working capital, generating or creating $50,000 in working capital is a small goal, but would make a massive difference. Now, is this something that I kind of like, I'm not sure if I'm on the right track here. Are you with me?
Well, let me jump in, Helen. Let me tell you what I hear, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Okay, cool. The changing, and
forgive me, but what's the exact changing the blank paradigm? What did you say?
Oh, changing the pet food. Sorry, pet food.
The pet food paradigm. Okay.
Yeah.
So now, what
we default to pet food,
You talk about that as being too big, whereas I just hear it as too vague.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like, how would you know the pet food paradigm had changed? Give me. Like, if a miracle happened and the pet food paradigm changed overnight, when you woke up in the morning, what would be the first thing you would see or hear or feel that would let you know, oh, the pet food paradigm changed overnight? Brilliant.
Well, okay, there'd be a really lot of people, not necessarily everybody, really big number of people making their own food for their dogs. And I think the second part of that is that my product would sell, I guess. But, you know, that's a necessary part of business, but it's not the first part. Does that make sense?
So what would you see on the news that would excite you about this? That you would go, oh, my God, it's really happening.
Okay. Gosh, that's a really good question. So I guess the pet food recall a few years ago now, like I don't know how many years, 6 years, well, really didn't change. Enough, it changed it somewhat. We're still in that same paradigm. So that was when lots of dogs died from a contaminated pet food. So it would be... it has to be something like, people have finally realized that dogs need real food. I don't know. It's a really good question.
So this is the direction I would encourage you to look in.
Okay.
Is that one of the reasons that it feels big and maybe hard and maybe impossible is you don't really know what you mean.
Yeah.
Now,
okay.
I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's like, you know, you don't know what you mean. Come back when you know what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm simply saying that creating is always a movement from invisible to visible.
Yeah.
So the more visible it can become to you what you want to see in the world, and it will become more visible as you talk about it more, as you reflect on it more, as you write about it more, as you talk with people about it more.
Okay.
The easier it will be for you to start to see what's next and how you move from where you are to where you want to be and how you move pet food from where it is to where you'd like to see it. And the easier it will be for other people to get on board and get excited and get enrolled and get involved, because they'll know what you mean. They'll go, oh, my God, yeah. How can I help?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Bloody obvious, but awesome.
Well, it's, you know, it always is when you see it.
Yeah, okay. I get it, because I've got 20,000 white pages of a book written. I've got, you know, all these things. You kind of go, how can I do it? But actually, the best way to do it is to start, you know, talking about it and defining it more. You're quite right, and actually seeing how that might look and all that. That's but it just seems so vague and nebulous, and you know. Anyway, yeah.
No, and that's great. And Helen, I'm going to make you the same offer. If you want to stay on, give us your details, and we'll get you into the program.
Oh, Michael, that'd be awesome. That would be awesome. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank
I'll talk to you. I'll talk to you next week.
See you on the other side. Thanks, mate.
All right.
Thank
you. You know, this is, again, I'm loving the calls, because this is what we do, right? We kind of go, well, I'd kind of like this. Well, what's that? I don't know. Now, I can't tell you how detailed you need to be in order to move forward, but I think you need to be exactly as detailed as you need to be to move forward. In other words, if you have no idea what to do, there's a pretty good chance you're not really sure where you're going. And the more you can begin to flesh that out, the more obvious it becomes what to do next. And fleshing it out isn't some complex technique. It's just beginning to talk about it. It's beginning to write about it. It's beginning to explore it with others. It's asking and answering questions, right? A lot of the power of coaching, a lot of the reason why coaching is so useful in the process of creating what you want in life is simply because your coach isn't stuck in your thinking, right? So they're probably stuck in their own coaching, right? They probably have the same kind of blind spots when it comes to what they want to create. But it's generally going to be easy for them to see, oh, the problem is just this. You just don't really know what you want. Or the problem is just this. You just not taking the next step. Or the problem is whatever it occurs that the problem is. And then you get back into the river. You get back into the flow of your creativity. And the next idea comes. And the next idea comes. And then a momentum gets created in the world. And suddenly your project takes on a life of its own. And one of the reasons why, so I sometimes do an exercise. It'll be in some way part of the the Creating the Impossible program, where I ask people to kind of look at, you know, sort of how in are you, like how resolved are you to create what it is that you say you want to create, and sometimes when people give a low number, it's because they don't really want it. Like I said at the beginning of the show. But sometimes when people give a really low number, it's because they think they know what it's going to take to create it, and they don't want to do it. Oh, I would have to talk to all these people and do this. Oh, I would have to make 100 cold calls a week for the next 12 years. Oh, I would have to. And they talk themselves out of it. Because they think they already know the path. The beautiful thing about creativity is you have no idea how it's going to come about. You have no idea what fresh ideas and inspirations are going to show up inside you as you begin to move in this direction. And you have no idea who and what are going to show up on the outside as your project starts to gain momentum and take on a life of its own. And that's why what looks impossible from where you're standing is actually incredibly possible. Okay, we're going to squeeze in one more call. We're going to go out to Indianapolis, and we're going to talk with Terry. Terry, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael.
Hey.
So I kind of forgot my question because I've been listening to everything being said, and really I think you're answering it as you talk. I guess it was something about the voices, about what to do with that voice in my head that just keeps coming up that says, well, that's not realistic. Well, that's not realistic. Well, how are you going to do that? You know, like how to quiet that voice. But then, I listen to what you're saying about it's about getting yourself out of the way and not making it about you.
Yeah, it's funny. When you said that, my first thought was I'm driving. I mean, I live in LA, so we've got sort of, generally speaking, it's actually freaking cold right now, but we generally speaking have nice weather and you can have the top down and just, and it means that sometimes people are, you can hear their radio as you're driving, even if it's not loud. Sometimes it's really loud. But so you'll be driving along and you're hearing somebody else's radio and you're trying to listen to whatever you're trying to listen to, but their music is playing really loud. And to ask, well, how do I stop the voices in my head? It's kind of like saying, how do I get the other person to turn down their radio?
Right.
It's only a problem because you're paying attention to it and it won't be there for very long. Like it would be like driving at exactly the same rate and speed as the other person so that you continue to obsess about how loud their radio is. Because if you just drive on, they'll drive on too, and at some point you won't be hearing their radio. Like, that's just how it works. And our minds work the same way. We don't keep thinking the same thoughts unless we deliberately keep thinking the same thoughts. And often innocently, but often what we do is we keep thinking the same thoughts so we can overcome them.
Right.
I've got to quiet this down. Well, if you weren't trying to quiet this down, it would already be gone.
Yeah. And it sounds easy and sometimes feels hard.
Well, here's the thing. It's not so much a question of easy or hard as obvious or non-obvious. When it's obvious, it's easy because it's obvious. Like, it makes no sense to make your car journey about what somebody else is playing in their car. When it's not obvious, when it seems like I can't drive as long as their radio is playing, well, then it's hard to not do something about it. It's hard to not obsess about it. It's hard to not listen to it because it looks like maybe you could or need to do something about it.
Yeah.
So if you aim yourself towards seeing the truth of how it works, if you orient yourself more towards, well, how does this work? Does it really come and go, or is it really constant? And you'll start to see, oh, it really comes and goes all by itself.
Right.
Then it will be more obvious, and because it's more obvious, it will be easy.
That makes sense.
So, Terry, would you like to join us for Creating the Impossible as our last caller of the day?
I would love to.
All right. Hang on the line. We're going to get your details, and I will start with you on Sunday.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you. So look, let me extend this invitation to all of you. So the program's called Creating the Impossible. You can learn more about it at michaelneal.org/impossible. And it's a 13-week program. It begins on this Sunday, but you can join anytime in the first month. And your job is to choose something that you would love to create. You would love to bring into being in the world. But the idea that you could actually do that in the next 90 days seems pretty darned impossible. And then what will happen is every Sunday, there'll be a Facebook Live with me. You don't have to come live. We'll post the video to the group. There'll be a community of over 300 people who are all working on creating the impossible in their own lives. Many of them, this is their third or fourth time through the program because it's really fun. Every Monday to Friday, you'll get a little audio from me, just like anywhere from 3 minutes to 10 minutes, where I will kind of nudge you and coach you and offer you sort of perspectives and strategies and ways of thinking about this whole conversation. And then every Tuesday and Friday, you'll have a chance to be on a call like this, like today's show, where either I will coach you or one of our Creating the Impossible coaches will coach you on your impossible project. So if you want to learn more about that, go to michaelneal.org/impossible. And all I can say is it's about as much fun as anything I know to do, to kind of take on an impossible project in an atmosphere that's that supportive and that playful and that fun. So I'm trying to think if we got anything else. Oh, yeah. We're doing this little thing called Super Coach Academy, which by now you're probably already either enrolled or you're not. But if you're interested in doing the kind of work that I do with the three principles, with the inside out understanding and the world, Super Coach Academy is the training where we go all in on that. And you can learn more about that at supercoachacademy.com. And the next training begins in about 10 days. Very exciting. So until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye for now.